From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Hillary Clinton finally bowed out of the presidential race.
Today, I am standing with Senator Obama to say, yes, we can!
She got 18 million votes during the primary and gave her support to Barack Obama. So what influence did and does Senator Clinton have on American politics? And where does the presidential race go from here? For more, we've got NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving. Hey, Ron.
Good to be with you, Farai.
So Hillary Clinton finally conceded on Saturday. She gave Barack Obama her full support. Explain to us how this worked, because she knew essentially that she wouldn't be able to take the delegates several days before she made that speech.
She did. She knew perhaps as soon as the Indiana-North Carolina primaries back a couple of months earlier that there would not be a chance for her to catch him in pledged delegates, and she was relying entirely on persuading a big majority of the super delegates to come to her standard and leave Barack Obama. So even the ones who were kind of keeping their powder dry at that point and not announcing were believed to be leaning in Barack Obama's direction. Otherwise, they would have gone with Hillary Clinton. And she was trying very hard to make that sale on the basis of what she saw as her greater electability. I think she went all the way to the very end, believing there would be a way to turn the superdelegates around, and it just never happened for her.
Yeah, we saw, in fact, some superdelegates committing support for the first time, but a lot of them, including some members of the Congressional Black Caucus, flipping their support. But anyway, let me play a quick clip from Hillary Clinton on Saturday.
When that day arrives, and a woman takes the oath of office as our president, we will all stand taller, proud of the values of our nation, proud that every little girl can dream big and that her dreams can come true in America. And all of you will know that because of your passion and hard work, you helped pave the way for that day. So I want to say to my supporters, when you hear people saying, or think to yourself, if only, or what if, I say, please don't go there.
Now, that is a poignant moment. It really speaks to Senator Clinton's wants and desires to change American politics. Has she changed American politics, for women particularly?
No question. Anyone from now on who asks themselves, can a woman be a serious candidate, a candidate who goes right to the brink of being nominated and nominated in a year in which being nominated by the Democratic Party is a highly valuable nomination to have, anyone who goes to that contemplation in the future is going to think Hillary Clinton has proved this can be done. Maybe Hillary Clinton will be back proving you can go all the way to the White House in 2012 or 2016. Maybe she'll be on the ballot this time. So we really have had a redefinition of what the upper limits are for women in American politics.
There are groups like the White House Project that are specifically devoted to women in politics. And the White House Project, for example, is specifically devoted to getting a woman in the White House. And I know that some members of the group, I think probably all of them, had incredibly high hopes. But not just specific groups. There are many people in America, many of them women, but not all of them, who really thought, this is our moment. And are those people, some of those people, going to be unable or unwilling to vote for Barack Obama, even if they are Democrats or Democrat-leaning?
I think it's quite possible some of them will be unable to transfer the kind of enthusiasm and loyalty that they had to Hillary Clinton to anyone else at any time. But with respect to this specific presidential election in November, I think Hillary Clinton herself said it best when she mentioned two words on Saturday, Supreme Court. If you care about the issues that have motivated a lot of people in the women's movement, if you care about issues that have motivated a lot of people in the gay rights movement, you're going to have to take a long, hard look at your choice in November and ask who's going to appoint justices to replace some of the justices on the court who have been on my side of those issues. Do I want that person to be John McCain or Barack Obama?
Now, back in December, let's do a little bit of a rewind. Senator Clinton was significantly ahead in the polls. She was ahead in money. How did the freshman senator from Illinois come from behind to pull off this victory?
You mentioned money, and money was probably the very first thing that he showed he could do. In that first quarter of 2007, when everyone was prepared to be enormously impressed with how much money Hillary Clinton had raised, Barack Obama raised more. And he raised more largely by motivating people through the internet, not just by going out and getting the maximum donation, $2,300 for the primaries, from a maximum number of people, as Hillary Clinton did, but by getting some of those, yes, some of the $2,300 ones, but also getting tens of thousands and then eventually hundreds of thousands of smaller contributions, so that in the end he had 1.5 million contributors. 1.5 million contributors. This is completely unprecedented in American politics. That was the first thing, the money. Second thing was he showed he could organize people as only a community organizer with a charismatic presence in large events can do. It was the little stuff down at the grassroots level, microcosmic level, and then it was the enormous events, 75,000 people out by the riverside in the middle of a workday in Portland, Oregon. Places like that where you had never seen crowds of this nature before, he has set records all over the country. So the combination of that rock star quality that got a lot of attention and that down in the weeds organizing where you get people out to attend caucuses on a Tuesday night, that was eventually how he did it.
Do you think that there could be Obama fatigue coming up? You know, politicians are a bit like rock stars. You know, they have this incredible charisma and people kind of fall in love with them, have these political crushes. As we have gone through this incredibly long primary process, do you think that as we enter the general election that people will just get more excited or that some of them will begin to just tune out a bit?
Excellent question. There will be some people who go in each direction, I suspect, and the great question will be where the preponderance lies. Will people decide that he's been something of a one-trick pony and they haven't heard anything new from him? They've seen the big events. They've seen the small caucus organizing. Now what can you do? What can you do to win in the fall? What do you do to beat John McCain and the Republican machinery in the media, in terms of their own organizing and fundraising? What do you do to beat them? Does he have a second act? And I think there'll be people who have never really paid a lot of attention to this process up to now, haven't really learned much about Barack Obama yet, may still be believing what they're seeing on the internet about him. And those people are going to learn more and be more attracted. So there'll be some people phasing past him a little bit and some people just coming into their first appreciation. And the question will be how those combine and how it stacks up against McCain and his pluses and minuses.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Obama-Clinton ticket. So, first of all, has her essential concession speech changed the outlook at all on whether or not she could be the VP?
Ultimately, no. Ultimately, that is a decision that he has to make on the basis of what he thinks is best for his presidency and the campaign to get there. He has appointed three people who are going to vet candidates and give him a recommendation, and he wants to give them weeks in which to operate. But there was a period of time last week, right after the last primary and before her concession speech, in which a tremendous force was building within the body politic of her supporters, essentially demanding that, being as how they had tied essentially in the popular vote and she was not far behind in pledged delegates, he really had to put her on the ticket. He really had no choice. And that, I think, has receded.
Now, what about Bill? There are some, we talked last week on the show about whether or not Bill Clinton would even be welcomed back into Sylvia's, the big, you know, soul food restaurant in Harlem. He's got his offices in Harlem, of course. Bill Clinton is an incredible campaigner, and he could be an incredible asset. But right now, there seems to be some bitterness between Bill Clinton and Obama supporters, if not Obama himself. Do we foresee any way that Bill Clinton will be wooed back into the race for president?
We do, because this is the biggest game. This is the big casino. And he is, as you say, a great campaigner and a great player. He's going to want to be out there pushing. In the end, he's going to be out there pushing for the Democratic candidate. And yes, I think he has experienced some resentment of Barack Obama. He keeps referring to him as that young man, this young man, and so on. Bill Clinton enjoyed being the top dog, and he had envisioned a kind of return to power through his wife's election as president. That's all been interrupted now, and he's going to have to sort it out. He's going to have to come to terms with his feelings. He's have to decide that he wants to get back into Sylvia's. And at that point, he's going to say to himself, there's only one team I can be playing on this fall, and he'll get out there and he'll do the best, as will Hillary, even if she isn't on the ticket. And by the way, one reason she might not be on the ticket would be because of the difficulty of dealing with Bill.
All right, let's get to a little practicality before we wrap this up. Money. in many races, in many presidential races, the Republicans have had more in the kitty, either for the party or for the candidate. What are we seeing this time around?
Usually we see the two parties do equally well among the very wealthy who can give the maximum. But then the Republicans do better among upper middle class and middle class people who are willing to give smaller amounts but give them regularly. The Democrats, generally speaking, don't do that well with those smaller donors. That's all changed now because of that dynamic I mentioned earlier. With 1.5 million people out there who have not maxed out, who can give again and give again, and many more people who could be added, some people think he'll have 3 million contributors by November. And that means that even if they're giving it on average a rather small amount of money, it's going to be an enormous war chest, the likes of which neither party has ever seen for a non-incumbent presidential candidate and which the Democrats have never seen for a president or a non-incumbent candidate. So this is just going to change that whole kind of logic that we've had in the past. And I think in the end, Barack Obama will refuse public financing and say, I've got my own system that's just as public and just as little guy oriented.
Very quickly, what about feet on the street, grassroots mobilizers, Democrats or Republicans ahead?
Democrats, I think this time, because of the enormous enthusiasm Democrats feel in general about this election cycle, the Republican brand is down, the enthusiasm level is not great, and the hard right conservatives don't really like John McCain that much, and so they and some of the social conservatives who provide a lot of those feet on the ground are not going to be as involved.
Well, Ron, it's always great to have you on. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Farai.
Ron Elving is the senior Washington editor for NPR, and he spoke with us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Long before Barack Obama's campaign slogan, Yes, We Can, there was the Spanish version, Si Se Puede. But Senator Obama hasn't gotten a lot of traction among Latino voters. Hillary Clinton won the lion's share of the Latino vote in the primaries, and even though Clinton has now endorsed Obama for the general election, no one is sure if Latinos will follow suit. We've got three experts on Latino American politics to help us get the big picture. First, we're going to talk with Mark Lopez, the Associate Director of the Pew Hispanic Center. Hey, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. So now that all the information is in, how did Latinos vote overall on the Democratic primaries?
In the Democratic primaries, they were overwhelmingly voting for Hillary Clinton, almost 2-1 across just about every single primary, with the exception of Arizona and Illinois. But beyond those two, pretty strong support for Hillary Clinton.
So Obama tried various things to change the math. And, you know, is there a difference, for example, generationally between older and younger Latinos and also between different demographic groups, as there are so many different groups from different cultures?
Well, it looked like the support for Hillary Clinton was pretty uniform across all different demographic groups and across all different Hispanic ethnicities. While it's true that among young Latinos, we did see a little bit stronger support for Obama than among older Latinos, young Latinos on Super Tuesday, for example, did vote for Hillary Clinton.
Now, Puerto Rico got its chance to go to the polls at the end of the primary season. Yeah. Here was an Obama ad, and it begins with a photo visually of the entire Obama family.
Puerto Rico tiene derecho a un mejor futuro. Mi plan ofrece nuevos incentivos para reponer los 40,000 empleos que se han perdido e invierte en la educación de los niños puertorriqueños. Este primero de junio será un honor contar con tu voto.
Now, Senator Clinton took Puerto Rico, but did an ad like this at least show kind of a good faith attempt by the Obama campaign to really say, hey, we've got a big tent and it includes you?
Absolutely. I certainly think that that's what we're probably going to see more of from Senator Obama as the campaign goes forward. But yeah, I would certainly say that that is the case. Particularly, we started to see him do some of this for Texas and again in Puerto Rico.
How important is Spanish? And, you know, you can be Latino and not speak Spanish, and of course you can be non-Latino and speak Spanish, but when we talk about Spanish language advertising, how critical is that?
Well, a large part of the adult population of Latinos are foreign-born, and a significant number of those speak either Spanish primarily or watch Spanish news media. So if you wanted to reach out to a large segment of the Latino population, that is those who might be of an immigrant background but are U.S. citizens and therefore eligible to vote, certainly Spanish language media is going to be important for reaching out to those to that particular constituency. I would certainly also say, though, that while Spanish is important and a candidate being able to speak Spanish and communicate to Latinos is great, it's probably not the key factor. It's an important factor, but not a key factor.
So at Pew, how are you really trying to track the Latino vote? I mean, you know, for one, it, you know, maybe break down some of the demographics a little bit for us. You talk about the large number of people who are foreign born, but then there's mm-hmm. also many different cultures under this umbrella, and the census, which says, okay, this is not a race, it's an ethnicity, and mark this box. I mean, there's all sorts of issues. Just give us a mm-hmm. brief primer on them.
Sure. The Latino population is made up of several different ethnicities. And when we think about Latinos at the Pew Hispanic Center, we're always thinking about important differences, or what we might call important lines along which you're going to see differences in attitudes and differences in opinions. So, for example, in ethnicity, Mexican Americans are the single largest group of Latinos, but there are significant populations of Puerto Rican and Cuban Americans who are in the United States as well. But growing more recently has been a really large Central American population, primarily Salvadoreño and also Guatemalteco. So you see many different new groups coming in with the most recent wave of immigration. So it's a tremendously diverse population. One other big thing about Latinos is that Latinos are very young. Over a third of Latinos are under the age of 30, so you have a huge chunk of the Latino population, more so than white or black, being young. And that, of course, portends to greater, perhaps, Latino political voice in the future, though that remains to be seen. We will see what happens in the future. But at the moment, Latinos are much younger. So those two factors are really big in explaining who Latinos are. And, of course, the big third one is immigration. Among adult Latinos 18 and older, over half are actually foreign-born. So we're talking about a population that's primarily foreign-born or largely foreign-born for those for adults. Among young people, though, those under the age of 18, it's the exact opposite. It's mostly native-born. So you've got a real diversity within the population on many different dimensions.
Well, great, Mark. Stay with us. Great update. Mm-hmm. And we've also got a couple more folks to add to the mix. We've got Lydia Camarillo. She is the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration and Education Project that brings Latinos into the election process. We've also got Oscar Garza. He's editor-in-chief of Tu Ciudad, a lifestyle magazine dedicated to Latinos in Los Angeles. Hi, folks.
Hello.
So I'm going to start with you, Oscar. Now, Barack Obama didn't need a majority of Latino voters to secure the delegates to gain the nomination, and Senator Clinton did take California. But, you know, do you have any sense in general of how Obama, who is now the presumptive nominee, is viewed in California, and also Senator McCain, the presumptive Republican nominee?
Yeah, I don't know if Mark has those numbers handy, but I'd like to know how the voters broke down in California amongst the age, with the age breakdown, because my sense is that he did much better with younger Latino voters in California than he did overall. There's going to be a percentage of tried and true devoted Democrats who are going to vote for the nominee no matter who it is, and as it turns out, it is Senator Obama. Does he have some, hurdles to climb? Probably so, but I tend to think it's a little bit overstated. Yes, I think it's true that there are some, especially among older Latinos, that there are some racial hurdles to climb, but I think it's insurmountable, and I think he'll do fine.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Los Angeles, which is where, you and I are both here in the L.A. area. And we've talked at different times on our show about both collaboration between and tensions between the Black and Latino communities here. So if you're, and this may be speculation, but give me a sense of what you think in a city like L.A. where you do have certain tensions, are people more likely to take those individual tensions and apply them to a broader political context, even if the two may not be directly related? That is, if you live in a neighborhood like South LA where there are tensions, can you bring that baggage to the national election?
I think it all depends on, what the turnout is and where the registration of voters is in Los Angeles as well. Is there high registration among both Black and Latino voters in South LA? Is there high turnout? Are there typically high turnout numbers? I think that'll be the key. There, aside from any racial tensions that exist, there are economic tensions that exist, you know, that in changing neighborhoods like that, where not only traditionally black neighborhoods have changed, but the economy has changed for those populations as well. And job sectors that were traditionally where blacks could rely on a certain number of jobs in many ways are being taken by Latino immigrants now.
Lydia, what do you think about the issue of tensions and collaboration? You know, there's the whole idea of people of color. Some people think that term is ridiculous, that there's no such thing, that you can't put, you know, Asians, Latinos, blacks, et cetera, into the same pot. Other people say that there are commonalities. How does that perception affect people's voting patterns?
Well, the real question is, will Latinos vote for Barack Obama in the primary? And the answer is yes. And based on past elections where African Americans have won, and they've won because they've had a significant share of the Latino electorate, I can tell you that Dinkins would have not been mayor had the Latino electorate not supported him in New York. Clearly, the senator would not be Senator Obama in Illinois had the Latino electorate not participated and voted for him. And obviously, in Los Angeles, Bradley, Texas, Kirk ran for United States Senate in 06. He did not win, but 78% of the electorate that's Latino supported him. So I think there's two realities. One is, are there tensions? Absolutely. Will the Latino electorate support Senator Obama? I think so. Well, the question is, will he garner more than what was taken in 2000 and in 04 by the Democrats versus the Republicans? We think that he will get at least 65% of the Latino electorate. And the question is, will his message and the resources that he has resonate with the Latino electorate on the five issues that matter to the Latino community?
Mark, I'm going to get to you in a second, but I know Oscar has something to jump in.
Yeah, Lydia made a very good point. But I think a key thing to remember is in Dallas and Houston, you have fairly large black populations and have historically had those as well as Latino populations. So there is a history of communities being aware of each other and knowing each other. Once you get to San Antonio, where I'm from and where I grew up, from San Antonio to Los Angeles, all those Latino communities have very small black populations until you get to Los Angeles. And so you have a huge swath of the Southwest where there are populations where the Latino community doesn't know black people as well. And I think that's a factor a little bit.
Mark, let's turn to the Republican nominee. You know, we see right now polls are saying that Senator McCain would get roughly 29% of the Latino vote versus Obama getting about 62%. How does that sound to you? And more than that, you know, whether or not you think those numbers are good, because polls are always polls, how do you think Senator McCain's record plays with different Latino populations?
Well, first, in terms of the polling, it sounds like a reasonable number, but I'm not sure. We ourselves at the Pew Hispanic Center have not done any recent polling to do a horse race question between McCain and Obama. We hope to have some numbers on that soon, but not yet. In terms of how he's done in the primaries, though, he was primarily, most of the states where there was a large enough Latino sample to determine how Latinos voted, he did win the Latino vote. So, for example, in Florida, he won 54% of the Latino vote, and so he got the most votes of anybody. In a place like Arizona, of course, he did very, very well because he's a senator from Arizona. So I think that there's some room here for McCain to do well with Latinos and with particularly with Latino Republican voters. But I would stress that what we have seen in our own polling is that in the last 2 years, Latinos have begun to change their party allegiance away from the Republican Party and towards the Democratic Party. In October of 2007, we found that 57% of our poll respondents said that they identified as Democrats, whereas only 23% identified as Republicans. So it's going to be interesting to see how well McCain does with Latinos overall.
Lydia, I want to play you a little bit of something from the news recently. Nydia Velazquez is the Democratic congresswoman from Brooklyn. She represents New York's 12th congressional district, and she's been a strong Clinton supporter. Here's some of what she had to say last week after Obama clinched the nomination.
Look, even in the early primaries to the last primary that was conducted in Puerto Rico, she won overwhelmingly. In Arizona, 63%. In New York, 72%. In Puerto Rico, it was overwhelming. In Texas. So something wasn't working or is not working. And I think that she will be able to help him in that regard.
And so in that sense, she seems to be advocating, the congresswoman that is, for an Obama-Clinton ticket. Do you have any sense of whether that would be viewed as appealing by some of the demographics you track?
Well, the Latino electorate loves the Clintons. That's why Hillary did so well. But I think at the end of the day, they're going to be looking at the five issues that matter to them, and I think they equally matter: education, jobs, the economy, health care, the war. 81% of the Latino electorate 5 days before the Texas primary overwhelmingly said it, that they wanted the troops to come home. 34% said that they have someone actively live in Iraq, and so they understand the difference between the war in Iraq and the war on terrorism. And last but not least, the immigration question. As you know, that the Latino voters who vote are citizens. So the immigration question, frankly, has become a litmus test about how they will be governed. Obama's position in California on the driver's license and then moving to Texas, saying he would not have a wall, and it would instead be a virtual wall, which all three candidates originally had supported a wall, is a good step forward. Now, on McCain's side, McCain has always had a good history on the immigration issue, but because he has to appeal to the right of his constituency, his base, he's going to be more conservative. And once Latinos understand that he is also Mr. English only, I think even Republicans in Florida who would normally vote for the Republican nominee might hesitate. So it's going to be an interesting election cycle. I do anticipate Latinos will come home if they're Democrats and vote for the Democratic nominee, and Republicans will consider McCain. And the question is, will they use the resources, the money, and the message to take them each to home run? For Obama, it's going to have to be more than 65% of the Latino electorate in order to stay on game. And obviously, it is broken down state by state. The election is won by 270 electoral votes. Latinos reside in states that make up 222 electoral votes, some of which are influential, like New Mexico, and others where are decisive, like New Mexico, or other places like Florida or California or Texas, where we are the deciding vote.
Let me get Oscar in here. California, of course, one of the big plums. What do you see ahead for California?
Well, you know, Lydia mentioned that she thought that Obama would get at least 65%, I think, of the Hispanic vote. The latest Gallup poll said that he's tracking at about 62%. I'm wondering if he actually needs to do much better than that. I mean, if he's at 65, 62, somewhere in there, that means that McCain is approaching Bush numbers in terms of what he got from the Latino vote, which was 40%, if not higher. I think Obama may have to do 75% among Latinos, and I don't know if that's possible, but he may need to do that to offset, you know, if he doesn't have Clinton as his running mate, he may need something to offset some of the white voters that he may lose.
Mark, quickly, you know, there was the whole demographics issue can be played so many ways. And in some senses, the census results, you know, there was this thing, oh, there's more Latinos than blacks, and there's this mm-hmm. rivalry, whether or not it was true or imagined. Mm-hmm. Is there any sense that the hopes and dreams of Latinos have been deferred a bit because the focus is on African Americans this time around?
Actually, I don't know the answer to that. I would just be giving speculation, but I would certainly say that in terms of Latinos and their demographic power, on the one hand, yes, census numbers suggest that there are now more Latinos than African Americans in the United States. However, I would stress that Latinos face a lot of barriers to participation. So I don't know if it's necessarily a deferred year, or if it might be that in the future there will just be an increased number of Latinos who will be participants and who will be voting. But at the moment, a lot of Latinos can't vote because they're not U.S. citizens or they're under the age of 18.
All right. That will definitely change over time. Mark, Oscar, Lydia, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We were speaking with Mark Lopez, Associate Director of the Pew Hispanic Center, Lydia Camarillo, Vice President of the Southwest Voter Registration and Education Project, and Oscar Garza, Editor-in-Chief of Tu Ciudad. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We are now going to let our bloggers weigh in on the whole political race, Barack Obama's candidacy, and the Latino vote. We're also going to talk about Hillary Clinton's endorsement. Today, we've got political blogger Jasmine Canick of jasminecanick.com, Shay Riley, who blogs at bookerrising.blogspot.com, and Sharon Toomer, founder and managing editor of blackandbrownnews.com. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
So, Sharon, let me start with you. You have African-American and Dominican heritage, and Dominican-Americans don't always see eye-to-eye with Puerto Rican-Americans, who are culturally different from Mexican-Americans, and so on and so on and so on. So when you talk about, you know, coming out of our conversation about Latinos, I mean, can we even generalize about how Obama is going to approach different Latino groups?
No, you can't generalize. And yes, es muy complicado. I have some intel for you. I was with my Dominican family this weekend in El Bronx. And there seems to be a different, from what I'm hearing across the country, they're big Obama supporters. They haven't always been, but they're first and foremost Democrats. So that's what they're leaning towards, and they're very happy to put their weight behind him now that Hillary's out of the race. So I believe we do have a different experience here, at least in New York. And yes, I concur. There are some, you know, we all talk about each other when the other's not in the room. So, you know.
Don't we all?
But politically, I believe that Latinos, at least here in the Northeast, I'm not sure about Union City where there's a big Cuban community, but Dominicans and Puerto Ricans are firmly behind Barack now that Hillary is out.
Jasmine, what are you seeing in Los Angeles?
Oh, everyone's happy where I'm from. We had a huge rally on Friday in support of his nomination. But I think at its most basic level, it just comes down to what's your party affiliation and what are those important issues that matter to you. So regardless of the fact, you know, whether or not you were supporting Hillary pre, you know, June 3rd, now that we have cleared the field, we know who the two folks running are going to be, you know, I think everyone just needs to be real about it. Like, if you have a problem with gas, the cost of gas, mm-hmm. and the cost of food and all of those other things, if those issues are important to you, then you need to support the candidate who you feel is going to be able to regulate that and bring about some change. I think for me personally, I've always been a Barack Obama supporter from the beginning, but had Hillary beaten him and became the nominee, I would have followed suit in terms of what my economic interests are, what's important to me. You know, I wouldn't have let the fact that I don't particularly care for her get in the way of that, because I am, at least for right now, a Democrat.
And Shay, you know, the latest census shows that there's almost 800,000 Latinos in the Chicago area, and most of them have Mexican heritage. What's mm-hmm. the relationship, you know, in Chicago, Chicagoland, as they call it, between blacks and Latinos?
I mean, well, you know, there's always some tensions, but I don't think it certainly isn't as pronounced as in Los Angeles, for instance. Mm-hmm. And because this is Obama's hometown, you know, people are very proud of his, you know, historic achievement, regardless of party affiliation. We like to see our Chi-town person get in there. And I think that Obama's task is to stay on top of the Hispanic vote, especially in those key battleground states like Florida and New Mexico, you know, and address issues of concern to Latino voters. And in particular, you know, maybe target some of the younger Hispanic voters with his Si Se Puede or Yes We Can message. I do have some Mexican relatives uh-huh. as well, and make that message appealing.
Now,
you know, to Hispanics.
For all of you, you know, and actually, Jasmine, you kind of answered this already. You talked about economic issues and economic interest, and so there's a couple of different things that happen when people look at politics. One is, do I vibe with the person, the candidate, the style? Sometimes race, gender comes into it. And the other part is, what are my set of interests? And so I guess, Sharon, first, do you feel that the interest of, you know, because you're in New York, let's say the Dominican American and Puerto Rican American communities falls in line with the messaging coming out of the Obama campaign and or the McCain campaign?
I do. I think that, well, with Obama, what people are concerned about most, and this is across the board, are rising gas prices. The cost of milk here is skyrocketed. And then you have the immigrant population who are very concerned. Some are really scared. And I have one family member who really had considered or really wanted Hillary to win because Hillary promised within the first 100 days that immigrants who were here illegally, she'd, you know, fix that. Whether that's real or perceived or whatever, what she believed is that she would be okay. So there's a fear. There's a lot of fear. So the immigration issue is huge, because in New York we do have a lot of immigrants, whether they're Dominican, Mexican, Central American, from the Caribbean. There are a lot of immigrants here. So just like everyone else, gas prices affect Latinos, and those are the issues that that they're concerned about.
What are you seeing, Shay, in terms of, I mean, is it economy, or are there other things that are coming up?
From what I've seen, certainly the economy, but I think that the task for, you know, John McCain, if he's going to, address this versus Obama, is to point out that, for instance, the reason why we have such high gas prices is that, one, there's so very little drilling in the United States because of various regulations that prevent us from drilling for our own oil, and two, what I would call big government greed, because even the oil profits that oil companies make pale in comparison to the profits that big government makes. It's about six times as much. So that's maybe something he can use to appeal to Hispanic, you know, voters as well, and something that makes, conservatives absolutely upset with McCain, which is on amnesty for illegal immigrants, ironically, is what will help him, or maybe will help him, with Hispanic voters.
All right. I want to make sure that anybody who's just tuning in knows what we're up to. This is NPR's News and Notes. I am Farai Jadea, and we've got three folks on today's Bloggers Roundtable. We were just hearing from Shay Riley, who writes at bookerrising.blogspot.com, political commentator Jasmine Canik of jasminecanik.com, and Sharon Toomer, founder and managing editor of blackandbrownnews.com. And so we're just talking a little bit about the economy, and Jasmine, let's crunch into this a little bit. According to new unemployment numbers released on Friday, the economy lost 49,000 jobs in May. That means the unemployment rate rose half a point to 5.5%. That was the biggest monthly increase since 1986. Now, African Americans were hit the hardest. Numbers leapt last month to 9.7%. Latino unemployment stayed the same at 6.9%. And, you know, how are people in your view as a political commentator based in Los Angeles dealing with this situation?
You know, I think one of the things that I will start off saying is that this election has galvanized and increased the participation of people who normally were never interested in politics. And a lot of that has to do with the candidates, and it also has to do with the state of the economy. So when you talk about unemployment, and you talk about the higher gas prices and higher food, people care, and people are paying attention, and they're getting involved. And so what I see is people who traditionally, that I know, normally never get involved in politics, don't volunteer on campaigns. They feel like the only way that they're going to get some relief is by getting, you know, their candidate in office, and so they're willing to do whatever they can do to do that. So, you know, I feel, you know, when we talk about the different races and the different issues, it all comes down to bread and butter issues. It's, can I pay my rent, my mortgage? Can I put food on the table? Can I put gas in my gas tank? And do I have a job to go to? Across the board, all races, that is what matters, and that's what we need to stay focused on. We cannot allow ourselves to get sidetracked on, you know, these issues, because the Republicans are going to try to use, you know, the fear of, you know, moral issues at the polls. You know, they try to do the whole hysteria with moral issues, and we cannot be divided, because what I do in my bedroom isn't going to affect you, But, you know, who we elect as president may affect whether or not you can put food on your table. And we got to stay focused on that going into November.
Sharon, though, sometimes when people are in the middle of tough times, politics seems extraneous. You know, it's kind of like the difference between if you really are broke and you need milk and you need to pay down your credit cards, you might just use your credit card to buy the milk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people look at politics as that, you know, that credit card bill that we just put it off. I don't need to deal with this right now. I've got other things to deal with. Do you think at this moment people who particularly are facing some of the worst of this economy are really plugged into politics?
I do think so. Also, I forget whether it was Shay or Jasmine who said that there's definitely, I think it was Jasmine, that there's just been a real interest from people who are really apolitical. But these are really tough times. I don't know. I'm sure you all know that. You read all the wires. You read all the newspapers say that. But they're, from a very basic human level, they're tough times. You know, I feel I'm very fortunate, very blessed. But, I mean, I feel like I'm back in college. I put $3 in the tank. It's never filling up. I live in a city where I can take public transportation. There are people who can't. And I think that will influence, meaning they live in areas where there isn't public transportation. And I think that will influence who is sending a message that this will change once they're in office.
Shay, how are things in Chicagoland?
Well, for me, they're, you know, normal. And I hate to be the minority on here, so to speak. But first of all, we're technically not in a recession yet. Just want to point that out. And even though the economy is certainly not optimal, I would certainly agree with that. 90% of homeowners are paying their mortgage on time. We've got inflation that's lower than it was in 1992 or even in 1980. I don't see the gas lines that I recall seeing when I was a youngster back in the late 70s. And even the other barometer, my own personal barometer, the black poverty rate, while it's about 26 or 27%, it's still lower than it was even in 1992. So what I'm trying to say is that, sure, it's tough, but we've seen far worse times in recent decades, and it's certainly nowhere near like the Great Depression, which, you know, people keep making it sound like it's the Great Depression. I can't help but think that these so-called doom and gloom stories are to help get big government liberals elected when it's us, you know, we are in control of our life. We cannot wait for government to do that for us.
Now, Jasmine, given kind of the interrelationship between African Americans and, you know, disproportionate number of people still, despite some, you know, drop in the military, working for the government, what do you think of these times? Do you think it's a question of, oh, just, you know, politicians trying to cover themselves? Or is there a real interest or burden that the African-American community has in terms of how the economy is going and our relationship to government?
I mean, we're suffering. African-Americans, blacks are suffering just like everyone else. You know, for me, this is the Great Depression, okay? I look around my neighborhood, and it is worse than I've ever seen it. We are interested, we are invested in this campaign because we see this as hopefully bringing an end to the situation that we're in right now. You know, the only thing that I could really say on that is what I said earlier, which is that I've seen young brothers and young sisters who have never been involved in politics, never even cared, paid attention, didn't even know who their council person was, let alone, you know, who represented them in Congress, now paying attention and getting involved and invested because they, too, are feeling the effects of what's going on in the economy. But one point that I didn't make that I wanted to make earlier on the immigration issue was that I'm, you know, ecstatic that Hillary Clinton had so many Latino supporters. But, you know, we have to also remember that, you know, Senator Barack Obama is a descendant of an immigrant, okay? I think he is also quite capable of recognizing and understanding the issues that immigrants in America are dealing with. And I wouldn't discount him on that.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to go into a speed round. This is something that's in some ways a little bit lighter, but still on the economic side. There's a bunch of celebrities, from Michael Jackson to Evander Holyfield, Ed McMahon, Marion Jones, the former Olympic gold medalist, Jose Canseco. They're all having houses that are up for foreclosure. And so I think one thing that happens a lot in our country is that, you know, we think, well, if I just made more money, everything would be okay. Is this really, Sharon, putting the lie to that? Because we're talking about, you know, Michael Jackson owing $23.5 million on a house, or, you know, a 109-room mansion for Evander Holyfield now possibly on the block. Should this be a cautionary tale for everyone?
Well, I don't think their problem is the subprime issue and why they're facing foreclosures. You know, Michael Jackson, we've been hearing about his money woes for a while now. So somehow I think he'll work it out. And I think, McMahon will get a bailout, a rent party or something to help
rent
him.
Rent party.
I mean, that's what it, now Jose Canseco and Marion Jones, it's just a perfect storm of new money, legal obligations like alimony, child support, some criminal stuff. And just living beyond your means. Maybe because I don't make that much money, I don't understand how this happens. How you can be so wealthy, make all of this money. I do understand, but, you know, I don't get how you're in foreclosure and you rake in millions unless you have a lot of legal bills. And I don't know if Jose did, but I definitely know Marion Jones had some really bad legal problems. So I just think it's living beyond your means and not spending wisely and not being, you know, prudent.
All right. Well, we're actually going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jasmine Canik is a political commentator who blogs at jasminecanik.com. She joined me here at our NPR West studios in Culver City, California. Sharon Toomer is the founder and managing editor of blackandbrownnews.com. She was at NPR studios in New York City. And Shay Riley blogs at bookerrising.blogspot.com. And she joined us from WBEZ in Chicago.